And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu on this Monday, March 27. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm good. Very good.
Yeah. Start of a new week.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun.
We're getting to see the end of that season. I wonder if the players feel the same. You know, because for all that's been said about trying to gain as maximum knowledge, repetitions, and building the brand and whatnot, do you think as though these guys would say, you know what, let's just keep on playing, and the schedule could be 85 game, 90 games, that it wouldn't matter. Guys are just happy to play, or they look forward to see the end.
I think Marte Saint Louis is bringing up the end of the season quite often. You know, he's talking about sprinting through the finish line and this and that. Like, I think internally they've kind of placed an onus on, you're almost there. Let's get to the end and let's finish strong, but it's almost over. Like, it's been a tough year.
Yeah.
A lot of adversity, a lot of obviously the injuries, and I don't think the season has gone the way the organization envisioned it at the beginning. You know, I think at this point they were hoping that, you know, Yaroslav Koski had 75 games in his system by the end of Caden Gooley, you know, Cole Caulfield verging on, you know, a breakout 40-goal season. You know, there are a lot of things that this team wanted that was not made possible by the string of injuries. And so, but you know, you mentioned the brand, and that's, you know,
it's one of Marty's words.
And yeah, when he uses words, sometimes I like to try and get him to explain what he means by it. And I thought we would share this with our listeners. I try to do that with Marty regarding his brand and what that actually means. And I don't know, I thought he had an interesting answer because it didn't really say a whole lot, but it did at the same time in kind of a unique way. He didn't really want to get into specifics, but I found it interesting. I thought we should play it for you guys.
To me, the main like
the two things I can really think about when you ask me that. To me, it's being connected, because you're not playing tennis, you're not playing golf. The five guys on the ice are so important to work together on both sides of the puck. So that's why I call connected. You know, you have five brains out there, but somehow we got to be on the same, you know, somewhat like on the same like software, so to speak, you know. And I know that's hard, but the more you talk about it, the more you work at it, the more you show example, I think it's impossible to think that every reps we're going to take, it's going to be connected. But the more you stay at it, the closer you get to it. And I know hockey is not, it's a game of mistakes, and it's not about being perfect, but it's about, you know, finding ways. And I feel like we've grown tremendously on both sides of the puck that way. And all that happens through balance on the ice.
So this notion of connectivity and playing with the same software and five brains on the ice and everything, it just kind of rehashes or re-emphasizes, I guess, where Marte's focus is, you know, with his players. It's not, he has skill development guys, or a skill development guy in particular, but, you know, Scott Pellerin as well. And you know, they don't like to be called skill coaches, but that's what they are. And Marte seems to be the brain development guy. And, you know, we've written a lot about it, talked a lot about his belief that he can teach hockey IQ, but he's really doing it. Like, he's really trying to do it, at least. I'm not sure if he's, to what extent he's being successful, but I found his emphasis on being connected and how it relates to their brand to be interesting.
Yeah, but when he uses the word brand, though, I feel as though his explanation and what we hear also from players is more about how are we going to get better and how we're going to apply things, rather than the brand being the result of how they play. You know, he didn't get into specifics about what would make, usually when we talk about a brand of hockey, you look at a certain team and you say, oh, that's typical Minnesota Wild. Oh, that's truly the New York Rangers, you know, or the Carolina Hurricanes, whatever. But the Canadians, it's, I wonder if at some point we'll get to a point where through Martin St-Louis teachings and the way also that the guys are developing their brain, the result that we're going to see on the ice will define a style of hockey that's proper to them. And I think that when I hear the word brand, that's what I'm looking for. And I haven't really seen that yet or heard that explained in such terms so far.
Well, I think his explanation does give a little bit of an indication of what they're talking about. And I think if you listen to a lot of other answers, you can kind of piece it together. Like a brand of hockey being, you know, one where areas of the ice that are not typically exploited do get exploited. One where you're using your teammates to their full extent. So I think, you know, when you see, for instance, something the Canadians have done more of late is sort of enter the offensive zone kind of on an east-west sort of pattern, and then going against the grain with another teammate who's skating the other way, and that's a way to create space. You know, that's just one example of players being on the same software, players' brains working together, where you identify what your teammate is doing, and because you've seen it on video, because you've heard Marty talk about it, because you've worked on it in practice, you can recognize the scenario and go to the appropriate area of the ice where you're going to get that puck and you're going to have space to shoot it and create a scoring chance. And the word scenario is something that Marty also uses very often in practice. And he talked about that recently as well, how he's still tweaking the drills so that they perfectly represent the scenarios that you see in games. But you see him use that word a lot in practice. And so I think the brand is not a typical hockey brand. Like, you know, you mentioned Carolina Hurricanes. They are a north-south team. They will dump the puck in and go forecheck and get it back. They're fast. They have, there's very, It's not very
difficult. They shoot from all angles.
Yeah, they shoot from everywhere. It's not very difficult to identify their brand. I think the Canadiens brand is a little bit more nuanced than that, and it's a little bit more subtle, and you have to watch it a lot to really catch it, because it's not, you know, it's not like they refuse to dump the puck in. They'll do it. They'd rather, you know, they'd rather carry the puck in, but they'll do it. They'll do all sorts of different things based on what the game gives them. And it's another thing that Marty talks about a lot. But I think their brand is really that ability to read off each other and find weaknesses in the opposition and opportunities for yourself to do some damage.
But it's interesting you mentioned, you know, entering, using east-west to attack, enter the zone, and then go against the grain. That's pretty much what Jussi Ylönen did when he scored his last goal. When he entered the zone, you know, he crisscrossed with Gallagher. Gallagher rushed to the net, and Ylönen did not pass. He just pushed the brakes and then decided to shoot once Gallagher was there to give him a proper screen. But he really went into an area of the ice where he could gain himself a bit of time, and then once he braked, well, he had his shot. And you, I think in a previous podcast, you also mentioned how even Josh Anderson has started passing against the grain also sometimes, which is something that he typically did not do before. So, but yeah, those are principles that I know that are dear to Martin Saint-Louis. Using the width of the ice, you know, it's pretty far mm-hmm. from Jacques Martin. He used to say, well, we want five guys on the screen all the time and be almost like the same herd, be like a beehive, you know? These guys with Martin Saint-Louis, they're stretching the ice a lot more. But it's just that between what he preaches, what he wants, and the results, depending on the players that he's got to play with, this might be two different things. So maybe the brand is evolving, and we'll see probably a more sophisticated and better applied iteration of that brand next season when there's hopefully a healthier lineup.
Yeah, some continuity. Like, that's not a... Yeah, it's a difficult brand to grasp, if that is indeed the brand. You know, I mean, we're trying to read into it a little bit, but it does take time. Like it's and it does require continuity that the Canadiens simply haven't had this season.
No,
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of continuity, that's kind of a good segue to our voicemail. We want to get to our voicemail early in this week's episode because it's about Nick Suzuki, who was named second star of the week in the NHL on Monday after putting up 8 points in three games. He actually has 10 points in his last four games, matched a career high in points with his 61st point on Saturday on a four-point night, which equaled his 82-game total a year ago. Obviously, now has 9 games of runway to set a new career high. So let's get to this voicemail from Michael.
I was quite surprised the other day in one of the French podcasts when you were talking about Nick Suzuki and questioning whether or not he has reached his ceiling, when, in my view, he had such a great first part of the year when he had Caulfield beside him and Doc playing and so many other good players around him, and he only really fell off in production when he was like one of the only guys, stars on the team. And I think that a full season with having those guys around him and a great top six next year, or hopefully next year or the year after, that his ceiling is way higher than what it is now. Are you able to discuss that and see if you agree or really believe that he is close to his ceiling? Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the question, Michael. I think it's an interesting topic. It's something that I haven't grasped yet in terms of Nick. Like, listen, he's already a super effective NHL player. I don't think anyone expects him to become a superstar level NHL player. Is he at a star level right now? I mean, I would say getting 61 points on this team with some of, as you mentioned, some of the line mates that he's had is definitely a very interesting total. I think he could build on that on a better team. But you know, he does have a there are some problems in his game for sure. And Marte St. Louis actually brought it up all on his own on Sunday after practice when he was asked about Nick and all the production. And he said, you know, well, he's got things that he needs to improve defensively. And I know for a fact that there's some within the Canadiens organization, there's a newfound or a new, I don't want to say emphasis, but analytics are being taken into account in their evaluation. It's not 100%. It's not even 50% probably, but there's a percentage there of their evaluation of their own players where they use analytics to sort of better their understanding of how they're playing. And Nick's defensive metrics have never been good. That's why our Dom Lecicien gets a lot of heat when he sort of, you know, has his contract protections and listed Nick as one of the worst contracts in the league. It's largely because his defensive metrics don't line up to a player who gets paid like him and a player who has a prominent role like his. So there are questions to be asked, but I think your point's valid as well, Michael.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I would have to go and listen again to what we said. If we let the idea flow that he was close to his ceiling, I mean, he's still only 23 years old, so there's clearly some room to grow. The one thing, though, is that Nick is now in his fourth season in the NHL, and what we've noticed so far in almost all of the seasons, maybe less last year, but before that and this year too, is that he starts off strong, has a dip in the middle, and finishes strong again. So, So there's an aspect of consistency which is super hard to get in the NHL, and that's in everybody's mouth. Every player talks about consistency throughout their career, and it's a holy grail to be able to figure out that consistency. Well, for Nick Suzuki, it's the sort of hockey that he plays early on in the year, and which he's able to grasp again towards the end. Can he maintain it through 82 games? I think that this is going to be a key for him if he wants to be able to reach a ceiling, because if he remains a player like that with these highs and lows, it might affect his overall production, but it's not even just a matter of numbers. It's just sheer efficiency on the ice. But I think that at this point, considering that he's been the only guy who hasn't been injured, the only forward who has not been injured, the only player who has not missed any time, actually. And the fact that he had to carry so many responsibilities on his shoulders by himself, I think it almost sounds a little bit like nitpicking to start talking about his ceiling, because he's been overall a very, very effective player for the Montreal Canadiens. And once Caulfield comes back next season, if they find also another winger to complement that line, I think that there's definitely a possibility that this guy could one day maybe, you know, hit 75 points a year. He might never be a true dominant number one guy. I think that he would need to add some defensive, I wouldn't say awareness, but improve his defensive game for sure against top lines in order to spend more time on offense and less is in his own end. But in terms of production, I think that I could see him, yeah, being a 75 point guy, maybe not as soon as next year, but close to that. I mean, usually guys hit their prime when they're around 24, 25. Well, he's going to be there really soon. So it remains to be seen.
I mean, that's kind of the thing with Nick, is that he'll turn 24 this summer. So he'll be 24 in training camp next year. And so 24 is still young. And I don't want to suggest that Nick Suzuki's getting old by any stretch. But at 24, no, of course not. But I mean, at 24 in the NHL, in the reality of the NHL, at 24, you are kind of expected, if you're a first-round talent and you follow kind of a typical progression for a first-round talent to enter the NHL, which Nick did. You know, he spent an extra year in junior, and then he came and he made it up to Montreal. And so by this point, by next season, you would think that he'd be approaching his ceiling. He should be. On a normal career trajectory, that's kind of where you would hit it. So I think that's kind of the thing. And it's just, you know, mentioning the metrics is, you know, Nick has played with an incredible amount of players. He spent some time on the ice with, or a decent amount of time on the ice with this season. And so, I mean, Kirby Dach and Raphael Harvey-Pinard are the only line mates of Nick Suzuki's where Suzuki and them had an expected goal percentage above 50%. Everyone else, it's in the 40s, and it's not
including
with Caulfield. So it's Caulfield, it's 43.27%. Like it's not only in the 40s, it's in the low 40s. Like it drops drastically for a lot of them. So that's just one example. You know, the Canadiens are obviously working with more specific and more sophisticated metrics than we are. They're not going on natural stat trick to get their numbers. They have their own database of things that are far more detailed. And I think there is some degree of concern where he needs to improve. And you can see it with your own eyes when Nick Suzuki, no matter who his line mates are, but when Nick Suzuki's on the ice and the puck is in the other team's hands in the Canadian zone, he'll often spend his entire shift in his own end. Like there's an inability there, and it's been a thing now for a while, but an inability there to kind of kill a play and get the puck back and start going in the right direction. So, but when he has the puck in the offensive zone, the same could be true. Like he's so gifted offensively, and sees the game at such a different level that he can, once he's set up in the offensive zone, he could spend his whole shift there. You just don't know from shift to shift which one you're going to get, you know? And so it's, but all that to say that maybe he hasn't hit his ceiling. And I think it's fair to point out that he's definitely had he has not had conditions that would allow him to reach that ceiling this season, for sure. There's been some definite tough times, but he's reaching an age where you would think that he should be approaching his ceiling at the very least.
But having a better team eventually will help him. I mean, he's not, when we talk about the fact that he's not a superstar, he's not a guy that's going to carry the whole team on his shoulder. He's not Connor McDavid. So at some point, having a better surrounding cast around him will enable him to be also a better player, no? So, I mean, there's experience, there's age and whatnot, but in 2 years, you could assume that the Montreal Canadiens are going to be a better team than they have been the last couple of years. And to that effect, it will help propel Suzuki to another level, having, you know, definitely a second line that could be as good or as challenging as the first line, having more stability in his line mates. Maybe that Caulfield ends up playing with Dach and Suzuki finds chemistry with other guys. Who knows? But it's I think that there's... I'm uncomfortable to project the idea that this, we might have said that he's close to hitting his ceiling, because it would be unfair towards Suzuki to say that. And I'm not saying that because he just had 10 points in 4 games, but it's also that there's so many mitigating factors. I mean, this team's been shit.
So. Yeah, it has. So, and this is actually, so So the other day I was asking, and you know, you could read his comments in our notebook that published today. But so I talked to Jake Evans about Nick, and sort of, you know, Jake has spent, you know, better part of 2-3 months watching this team play. He's also a pretty cerebral guy generally off the ice, and sees the game in somewhat of a unique way, and could express the way he sees it very well. So I thought he'd be a good guy to ask what he sees when he watches Nick play. And over the course of that conversation, he mentioned, because I mentioned, like, I was, because Jake is considerably older than Nick, and he's like, yeah. But Nick acts like he's older than everyone. Like, he talks like he's older than everyone. And I was like, and at the time that he said that, it reminded me how often Nick Suzuki referred to Raphael Harvey Pinard, who was standing next to Jake at the time speaking, how often he refers to him as kid. He's a good kid. Whereas Raphael Harvey Pinard is actually older than Nick. And so I mentioned that to Jake, and Jake was like, what, really? He's older than Nick? I was like, yeah, like by a few months, but yeah, he's older. He's 24 right now, and Nick will be 24 in I think it's August. And Jake was kind of taken aback. And so it kind of shows, like, there's your biological age or your actual age, and then there's your hockey age, which is kind of measured by games played. And so, you know, in that sense, Nick is older than Jake and Raph and all sorts of guys on this team. So I think that's how Nick looks at it. It's not how old you are. It's how long have you been in the league? How many games have you played? What experiences have you had? And in that sense, he considers himself a veteran.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. Yeah, he considers himself a veteran. Yeah.
Yeah.
But remember when he was a rookie, Ben Sherratt used to say, oh, he's mature beyond his years. So it's not just the amount of games that you have under your belt. It's also what's your mindset approaching those games, even at a very early age. So you can arrive there and have the mentality or the assurance of a veteran. Maybe not pretend that you're a veteran when you're not, but at least having that poise. Again, that's something that we hear it a lot about him for with his play, but even in his mentality and his behavior. You know, how do you carry yourself? That helps also projecting a certain age, a certain hockey age. I like that expression.
Yeah, it's definitely how Nick sees it. Because whenever I point out that he just referred to someone as a kid who's older than him, he just doesn't see it that way. I really think that he considers age to be your amount of time in the league, and that's a good way of looking at it. Because really, you shouldn't, you know, after 200 games in the NHL, no matter how old you are, I mean, that's kind of where you should start to get kind of a good idea on what someone is all about, and that player should have a good idea of what the league is all about and how they can best handle that. And so, you know, Nick is, you know, on Monday afternoon, prior to the game against the Sabres, he's at 282 NHL games. So he's well past that 200 game mark. He's learned a lot about how to be effective in the league, about how to, you know, how to best exploit his skills. But I think he's still, and I think the organization and Marty clearly feels that he has some things to improve on. If he wants to be the real, like, you know, sort of the number one alpha male center for this team, playing against the top opponents and really being like the type of player that he idolized growing up, which was Patrice Bergeron. You know, this comparison is unfair because Patrice Bergeron is a first ballot Hall of Fame player and is probably the most complete player of his generation. And it's great to want to emulate a player like that, but that's the style of game Nick would like to play. Not necessarily to be him, but to be like him. And, you know, I think he's a little bit more creative offensively than Bergeron is and was, just in terms of his imagination and his ability to create. Well, as we mentioned already, you know, able to create sort of situations to exploit. on the offensive end, but on the defensive end, there's some work to be done there for sure.
Yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
a
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Speaking of kids and guys who are, you know, older, younger, whatever, we've got a new kid in town, and the town being Buffalo. Sean Farrell has signed with the Montreal Canadiens and joined the team in Buffalo, where the Canadiens are facing the Sabres tonight. Sean Farrell is 21, signed his entry-level contract on the weekend after a tough loss, you know, in the NCAA National Championships. My God, Harvard got routed 8-1 against Ohio State. I think they were expected to be one of the teams at the Frozen Four. But the Canadians must be happy because that means more time to integrate Farrell into the lineup. So he's not going to play against the Sabres. I doubt that he's going to play against the Flyers. Who knows? But he should play sometime this week. How do you think that a player like that, because we've seen last year with Jordan Harris was a defenseman, had time to play 10 games with the Montreal Canadiens at the end of the season. Now Farrell will have a shorter runway. How do you think that they're going to integrate him and use him while he's put in the lineup? What would be the right way to go about that?
I mean, when you say I wouldn't think he would play in Philadelphia, I mean, I'd be surprised if he didn't play in Philadelphia. I mean, they didn't bring him here to sit around. You know, I mean, it's not as if he's coming in cold. He's been playing. So it's not inconceivable that they would get him in as soon as possible, because I think they want to get him some games. And honestly, you talk about them going to the Frozen Four. I think there was some concern within the organization about signing him if he made it as far as the national championship game, at which point there would be like no time for him to play. And so then they would be burning a year of his contract for nothing. So that might have actually been a really sticky situation, you know, as we kind of wrote about last week in last week's notebook. But you know, Sean Farrell, having done extra credit during COVID, is in a position to graduate this summer. So had he done that, or if he does that, and had the Canadiens not signed him, he could have been an unrestricted free agent, which the Canadiens were not going to allow happen. But at the same time, they were not, I don't think there was a huge enthusiasm to have him burn a year of his contract while playing a game, you know, the way, I guess, Ryan Poehling did back in the day. So, so this worked out for both parties, and I think they want to give him as much runway as they can. Obviously, I think playing him tonight would have been irresponsible, but I could see him playing on Philly on Tuesday, and if not, then definitely he would play on Thursday against the who they got on Thursday, the Panthers, and so because the Canadiens are off on Wednesday,
yeah.
So it's not like he's not going to get a practice in before he plays. That seems pretty clear because I don't think they're gonna wait for a practice. I think there is an eagerness to get him into the lineup to see what they have, to see how he fares against NHL competition. And you know, his teammate Aiden McDonough made his debut the other night and didn't take him that long to get in. I can imagine the Flames are probably gonna get Coronado into their lineup as soon as they can as well. Like I just feel like with the college guys, they're generally put in relatively soon. And so, and I think he's going to be given opportunities here. Like, I mean, I don't know how Marty's going to look at it, but even Marty sort of hinted that it might not be that long when he kind of mentioned how, you know, the team being more organized, the team having a certain structure, their brand being what it is, having established that, having grown with that during the season, makes it a lot easier for someone like Farrell to enter the lineup than it was for someone like Harris at the end of last season when the Canadiens were just losing game after game after game and really playing at the string but not looking like a team that's all that competitive. And so the Canadiens, you know, there are nights like that, but they do generally remain competitive in their games and they do have some semblance of knowing what they're doing on the ice. And so I think that's kind of what Marty mentioned, is that it's easier to integrate a new guy when you have sort of an established, you know, brand, like he likes to say, but, you know, a system, whatever word you want to use. So that also kind of suggested to me that he's not going to wait too long either. But in terms of ice time, in terms of role, I'm not sure. I would think he's going to get some time on the power play because he's an excellent power play guy. So just an amazing distributor. So I think he's going to be given every chance he can get to succeed because there's no reason not to.
No, you're right. And I liked what Jordan Harris said about this experience of playing a few games at the end of your the end of the season and just have your baptism of fire in those circumstances. Because Harris said that it helped him a lot into understanding the systems, understanding the style of play. And he said that, well, it enables you in the summer to come up with drills that will make the transition easier for your first full season. So that there are a lot of information that you'll get. It's not necessarily making an impact right away. It's just understanding what you are about to face throughout your professional career. So it's thrown at you and I think that you're allowed to make mistakes. And Martin Saint-Louis was pretty clear about it, about expectations and or lack thereof regarding Farrell. And it's just go out there, play your game. Don't try to be perfect and just enjoy it. But at the same time, it's picking all that information, say, okay, that's how they do it. That's how different it's going to be. What sort of moves did I used to do that are not going to work at this level? What parts of my game are most transposable? All these informations you can get in half a dozen games. It's not a lot, but each and every game that you play gives you that much more information. And after that, well, you can best prepare for the summer. So Harris said it's something that was really useful for him. So and he thinks that Farrell, for having faced him on a couple of occasions, and I know that they've been spending time together also at the development camp in Brassard over the summer, he thinks that he's going to thrive. So it's going to I'm curious to see where he's going to be put in the lineup to. I can see him being like a guy that could play the flank on the second power play and be a very good puck distributor. Maybe less of a shooter because he doesn't tend to shoot a whole lot. It's not that he doesn't have a good shot. It's just that he prefers to pass. But he'll find the seams wherever they are, however small the hole, he's going to fall. He's going to find the opening and reach his target. So he's going to be a very exciting player, I suspect. So I just hope that the Canadiens can bank on a guy that is a later round pick, because he's a fourth round pick, right? So it's okay to say, well, we need to hit on those high draft picks, but once in a while, if you can find a guy that's in the fourth round, fifth round, and you really swing for the fences with a guy like that, and you manage to find a top six forward, that's, you need that sort of wins in an organization. And the Canadiens that just have not had that since Brendan Gallagher. So they're in a position, I think, with Farrell, maybe with Joshua Roy, to have two of those. And I think that it would be a huge difference for the Canadiens down the line to have guys that can elevate the pipeline and make it dangerous and potent beyond the first round picks and the second round picks that they have. So you have to find gems later on, and Farrell, from what we've seen in college, has a chance to be one.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. The other day, I was talking to our colleague Guillaume Lefrançois at La Presse, and I just kind of wondered out loud. I was like, how many teams in the NHL have two of their own seventh round picks in the lineup right now? And the Canadiens are the only one. There are other teams that have two seventh round picks, but they're not their own picks. And so Jake Evans and Raphael Harvey-Pinard are in the Canadiens lineup and deserve to be in the Canadiens lineup. I know Harvey-Pinard is here because of circumstance, but I think the way he's been playing obviously suggests that he deserves his spot, which brings us to sort of, you know, with Farrell's arrival and Laval really in a bit of a tough situation to get into the playoffs. You know, we mentioned how the Canadiens would like to get Jesse Ylönen and Raphael Harvey-Pinard back to Laval to help with that situation. But, you know, sometimes circumstances change. And you know, Harvey-Pinard putting up a hat trick, like he's just making it really difficult for the Canadiens to send him down. And good on him for that. You know, like that's what you're supposed to do. And even Ylönen, who I think he has 4 goals in his last 5 games, I mean, he's making it difficult too. Like it's you know, you're really going to upset your coach if you take away two guys that have been pretty effective players for the big club just in the name of helping out Laval. But I do think it's an interesting sort of quandary for Canadiens management, because there's a definite desire to get Laval to the playoffs. They want Laval Rocket playing playoff games, and they want those players playing playoff games. And so getting Ylönen and Harvey-Pinard back would definitely help in that regard. There's no doubt about it. Would put everyone back into like an appropriate spot. But man, how do you send Raphael Harvey-Pinard back to Laval after the night he just had on Saturday? It's tough. It's tough. It's a tough one.
It's... I just don't see it happen. And even before that hat trick, I mean, he's been playing stellar hockey. He has very few bad shifts. He's always where he's supposed to be. He's been fitting in seamlessly with Suzuki. And also his brand of hockey makes it so that he can go up and down the lineup. I'm not sure what he's got to prove at this point. I mean, if he's sent down once the Canadian season is finished and he helps the Rocket once they've reached the playoffs, fine. But in order to say, well, we're going to take him out of an environment where he's really finding his rhythm in a way that few rookies do, because they go through, you know, hiccups, natural hiccups. That's normal. But Harvey-Pinard has been, in terms of his work ethic and in terms of his energy and dedication to the game, there's been, we were mentioning the word consistency earlier. I think that there's been a very interesting level of consistency so far in his game. It's 29 game sample size. It's not huge, but it's starting to be significant. And to, you know, stop him in his tracks like that and say, well, you go back to Laval because they need the help to make the playoffs, it would be puzzling to say the least. But there's going to be a decision that will need to be made, because Farrell is here. They'll want to play him, as you said. Rem Pitlick is already in a healthy scratch tonight in Buffalo. So you got two extra forwards. And that's not to mention the fact that Joel Armia has started skating again. So there's a chance we might see him again. So there's going to be, and the Canadiens have spent a certain amount of time, a few weeks, if I'm not mistaken, without an extra forward. They were just carrying 12 forwards. Now, if they have 14, now they're in a position where they say, you know what, we're going to send help. Now, who is that going to be? I don't think that it's going to be Harvey-Pinard, but they could choose to send Ylönen down. They could choose to waive Rem Pitlick, who's got another season to his contract. And I don't think that another team would say, oh, we're gonna claim Pitlick to play him now for the rest of the year if he's got another year to his contract. That may be what saves him and protects the organization from Pitlick being picked up on waivers. So that could be a way around it. Say, we're going to keep the two younger guys that are promising, even though we papered them for the AHL playoffs, and we intend to send them down if the Rocket makes the playoffs. But for the rest of the season, we'll continue developing those players at the NHL level, and send a different type of help to Laval in Rem Pitlick, even though he has to go through waivers before that. That would be it's a riskier play to a certain extent, but it's probably the thing that makes the most sense in my mind in terms of when if you put development as a priority. Because I was talking to Ilonen about that to say, well, you know, we could, yes, you guys say that you want to build your collective game at the NHL level and sprint to the end of the season and whatnot, but the critical games, the meaningful games right now, they're being played in Laval more than in Montreal. He said, yeah, I get your point. And it's all good. And it's fine to say that, you know, it'd be great to participate in that. But at the same time, I consider that every game that I play in Montreal right now are super, super important for me in adding the details to my game that will make me earn the trust of Martin St-Louis. So for me, being here is meaningful. And I'm sure, even though I didn't ask the same question to Harvey Pinard, I'm sure that he thinks the same. So it goes back to, we've been talking about development the whole year. That would be probably a situation where, yes, circumstances change, and I'm not sure if they saw early on when they papered those two guys that they would be that effective, especially Hervé Pinard. But it would be a situation where they could put their money where their mouth is, and ultimately saying, well, their development means continuing in Montreal, and we'll find another way to help the Rocket. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Listen, it's the Rocket need help. I mean, that's the thing. And if it's it, so just to paint sort of the picture for people of what's going on with the Rocket, Monday morning at this point, Monday afternoon, there are no games in the AHL today. So they are 1 point out of a playoff spot. The Cleveland Monsters, which is the Columbus affiliate. No, it's not. Who's Cleveland, the Columbus affiliate?
Yes.
Yes. So they have the final playoff spot in the North Division with 63 points, but they have 10 games remaining. The Rocket have 62 points, but have 8 games remaining. So Cleveland has 2 games in hand on them. And Belleville has 62 points, also with 8 games remaining. Laval holds the tiebreaker in terms of regulation wins right now. But they have this, I mean, honestly, they could be out of it by the end of the week. Honestly, like they're playing in Manitoba tomorrow. The Moose are third in a very strong Central Division. That's obviously the Jets affiliate. Then they're in Rockford on Friday, which is the Blackhawks affiliate. They are holding down the final playoff spot in the Central Division. And then they play in Milwaukee on Saturday. And Milwaukee is tied for first in that Central Division, Milwaukee being Nashville's affiliate. So they have a tough week ahead of them. All these games are on the road. Opponents they don't face very often. And the one thing they do have going for them is that Belleville is playing 3 games in 3 days on the weekend. And they're playing Syracuse, who is third in the North Division. And then they have a home-and-home with Toronto, which is by far the best team in the division and is one of the top teams in the entire league. So that helps. Cleveland has a game in Rochester on Wednesday and then back 2 games against Hershey, which is also a very strong team. So this whole thing could, you know, by Sunday, I think the Canadiens are going to have a better idea of what's going on with Laval. At that point, Laval will have 5 games left. So I would think that that could be when the decision is made, when they get back from this road trip. You know, Laval will be back on Sunday. So maybe next week, this situation will play itself out. And whether it's Harvey Pinard and Ilonen, whether it's Pitlick, I mean, who knows what they're going to decide to do. But, you know, I do know that the fact that they papered those two guys gives them some impetus to get them back to Laval at some point. But it's just a difficult thing to do. And I think your points on development and rewarding merit as well. You know, you don't want to send guys down when they're finally figuring it out in the NHL. You want to reward that. You want to say, okay, we see what you've done and we value it, and this is, we're going to keep you here. So again, as we said off the top, it's a quandary because Laval's in a tough fight right now. They're fighting for their lives, and it could play out. Every game is a playoff game for them. They have 8 games left. They got to win probably 6 of them, maybe even 7 to get in. So it's going to be a tough call for the Canadians because the more they wait, it could be too late. By the end of this week, it could be too late. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, if the Rocket loses their upcoming 3 games after that, the Canadians will say, well, there's no point in sending those guys down.
Yeah, still exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's something worth monitoring, and it's something I know that the Canadians are monitoring very closely, and they desperately want Laval in the playoffs. So it makes decisions, these difficult decisions, that much more difficult because from an organizational standpoint, they see that as valuable. And so from an individual standpoint, even though Ullinen and Harvey Pinard are getting value out of what they're doing in the NHL, organizationally, does that supersede the development of these two guys? I don't know. I'm not sure. But, you know, things change. The situations are fluid. But last I'd heard that Canadians did want to get them back to Laval once they were healthy enough to do so. And they're getting to that point now.
Absolutely. Well, in the meantime, the Rocket has started playing Jaden Struble. He played a couple of games for them. And so did Emil Heinemann, the left winger.
Yeah, he got his first goal.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. And I think he scored 2 goals, actually. He scored yesterday again. So he's got two goals in 3 games. So that's pretty good. Yeah. He looks like an accountant with his glasses on, that guy.
What's wrong with accountants?
Nothing. Hey,
leave the accountants alone. You just came from your
I account, saw mine you? This morning. That's yes, why it's exactly. Gone top of my head.
All right. Well, let's leave it. Let's leave this week's episode with talking about Marc-Antoine's accountant. But just want to remind everyone that we do have the Athletics kind of baseball opening day promo sale is still going on. So you can get a year's subscription at the Athletic for $1 a month. It's a pretty good deal to just try us out and see if you like what you see. If a perfect way to do it would be to go click on today's notebook, which has more on the Nick Suzuki stuff that we were talking about in this episode, a little bit about Farrell, Jordan Harris talking about sort of inclusiveness in the NHL, which I thought he was pretty, some pretty thoughtful comments from him, and a bunch of other stuff. So click on that. You get to subscribe for $1 a month for 12 months. See if you like what, and see if you want to stick around after that. And otherwise, whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, please leave us a rating and a comment. We read them all. We love hearing from you. Please do that. It helps other people find this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to.
And if you can do like Mike did and leave us a voicemail if you have a question for us so we can debate in our podcast. So you can do so by calling our voicemail at 646-847-9404. We'll see you on Friday for Le Sport Athlétique. Have a good week, everybody.